Hello and welcome to the Spin Podcast Talk Show. I'm your host, Eric Deveney, and today we have a great show lined up for you. I'll be talking with Tim Knuth from Network Virtual Support, but first, a word from our sponsors. The Spin Podcast Talk Show is sponsored by UBA, United Business Alliance, the number one strategic alliance management firm. They strive to work with small and medium-sized businesses, helping them become more profitable through concentrated efforts on business fundamentals. UBA can be contacted at 1-800-838-7716 or online at www.unitedbusinessalliance.com. In addition, the Spin Podcast Talk Show has one available sponsorship open, and bids are currently being accepted. To learn more, contact Spin Super Powerful Networking at 1-800-521-4304 or online at usspin.com. That is usspin.com. Now, as I was saying, we have a great show lined up for you today. Tim Knuth of Network Virtual Support is on the program. Tim is the founder and current president of Network Virtual Support with over 16 years in the IT field. And we're going to be talking with him a little about the Network Virtual Support history, the services, the market demographics, the IT industry as a whole, and where Tim sees his company and the industry headed. As you probably already know, the point of the Spin Podcast Talk Show is to get you, the listener, valuable business and industry information to help make you more successful and more profitable. So without further ado, let's welcome Tim onto the program. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great. You know, I always like starting off with, Tim, how about you tell us a little bit about where your company's at, what exciting things you're doing right now, you know, as being a member of Spin. How about you give us your 60-second spotlight?
Well, I'll actually go a little longer than 60 seconds on this. I'll give you a little history as well.
Sounds good.
Kind of get people to understand where we're at, what Network Virtual Support is about as well. As you mentioned, I have over 23 years of experience in the computer industry. I have over 16 of that as professional. So I've been a hobbyist for over 23 years. I've been involved in computers. Over 16 years of that, I've actually been working in the industry, working with businesses of different sizes. I've been with a lot of different organizations as well as my own company. I've had my own company for over 16 years. But I've also worked with other companies such as Microsoft, helping out their working in their data center and handling on average of 3,000 servers a day, maintaining 99.999% uptime. I've worked also in the healthcare industry and worked with organizations such as Health Team Northwest, where we had multiple servers up to 400 individuals that we were supporting. About 300 workstations and 400 employees. So I fully understand the realm of tech support from both a server side as well as from a workstation user perspective. Been dealing with networks for about 16 years now. Really kind of got hooked into networks in the infant stages of networking back in the DOS stages of Lantastic and early stages of Novell. There was a little bit of the Microsoft perspective in there when they were doing Windows for work groups back with Windows 3.11. Worked consistently in that area of networking, and even on the Apple side, tying in Apple computers onto an IBM network. So have a variety of experiences on that level.
Fantastic. Well, you know, you have such a broad spectrum of experience in so many years. You know, I wanted to first off start off by asking you, how about you explain a little bit to me and to the audience listening, you know, what kind of products, programs, and services are you actually offering right now? What is kind of the specialty for Network Virtual Support?
Well, that's a great question, and actually, I need to go back in history a little bit to kind of give you a perspective of where we started and what we're doing now. Actually, I started my company years ago as Tim Knuth's Computer Services. Very original naming. And that was a great name. And started working with people's computers. Wanted to be able to provide a great service to people at a lower price. And that was great. Started my company back in California, moved it up here to Washington State in late 1995. And at the same time I brought it up here, I started looking around and seeing, well, what's going on in today's world? How can my business change a little bit? So I started looking at the web world and actually did a name change of the business, changed the name of the business to Blue Skies Web, because I wanted to incorporate both web services as well as networking services. I really still had interest in putting computer networks together and maintained that name all the way up until the year 2005. And the fall of 2005 really kind of saw that there's still a change going on in the industry, so we wanted to change the name to reflect changes in the industry. So we actually changed the name to Network Virtual Support, so that way people can kind of understand that we're doing support of your computer systems, but in a new way. And what that new way is, and this is part of what the services we bring together as well, we actually handle 95% of your IT needs can be resolved via remote service. So I can actually log on to your computer via remote. I could be anywhere in the world, and I can hit onto your computer, talk to you on the phone, solve your issue, and you're back up and running very quickly. So there's very little downtime to you as a user because I had just resolved your issue. You're not waiting for me to drive there. You're not waiting for me to make an appointment to come out next week or sometime in a couple, 2 or 3 weeks. I'm there instantaneously. Well, with that, what type of services we provide is a great question, because we actually provide everything for workstations, OS installations, software installations. Obviously, an OS installation we have to be on site for, a little bit different. But applications, we can do that remotely. Application support, why is this thing working this way? Well, let's dive into it and see what's going on. User support, well, hey, this isn't working anymore. My password doesn't work. I can't get onto the network the way I need to. Well, I can come online at, via remote, investigate those issues. We also handle server issues. We'll do new server builds out. Again, those have to be on site. Once they're up and running, I can actually administer your server via from my office, add users, subtract users, make changes, make sure your software patches are updated, make sure you have a complete package to where your entire office is covered. Your workstations have new patches, new software, software patches, virus patches, spyware updates, and checking all those on a regular basis, handling the end-user issues. Oh, I can't get an email. I can't do this. What's going on the server with that? I can't find this file when I try to restore it off the backup tape. We take care of all of that, as well as we take care of the entire network. So we log in. We make sure your firewall is working. Is it up to date? Does it have patches? How's your VPN working so those remote users can come in? Then we also have a different type of suite of products that we help with medium-sized companies, small and medium-sized companies. I range that in somewhere along the process of about 20 to 40 workstations. And those companies, I find, need assistance with setting up an official IT department. What are IT policies and procedures for their company to make sure that they don't have problems in the future, make sure that the computers are being used in the fashion that they're supposed to? Oh, they're going to move. Well, we can come alongside them, help them do a move plan, and make sure that they move very smoothly and quickly and efficiently. Oh, they need somebody to come alongside and help them with new management of their network. And in terms of security auditing, hey, what's going on with their network? What's happening? Why are we having problems? So we come alongside, we bring a host of other management items, as well as just actual physical, we get down to the nitty-gritty of the server or the workstation or the firewall.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. Those are the type of services we provide.
Fantastic, Tim. Thanks for giving the whole complete answer. I'm sure that the audience likes to know that. So how about kind of break down, you kind of talked about small companies and medium-sized companies. Paint me a picture of exactly, you know, who you normally work with. Is it a company with 10 employees in a Pacific, you know, that work normally in wholesale or retail? Kind of paint me a picture of, what's your best client, just so that we can get a real understanding of who it is that you like to work with.
Well, what we found that works the best with our maintenance agreements with our clients is pretty much the low-end client has at least a single server and four or five workstations. And they have some sort of high-speed internet connectivity, which everybody does these days, whether it's DSL, cable modem. Fortunately, the prices have come way down on that, so that really allows people to hop on the internet and really use resources. So the low end, you know, like I said, server, four or five workstations. We move all the way up to approximately 40 to 50 workstations and three to four servers. And once they hit a company of that size starts hitting that break spot, it's actually cost effective for them to bring somebody on staff full time. And they're going to be able to handle that employee at that level. Before that, we could actually save them a considerable amount of money by handling their support off-site. And by them not having to do an employee basis, we could save them probably $20,000 to $30,000 minimum for a company. Let's say, for example, they have 30 workstations and two, maybe three servers. Well, instead of having somebody brought into their in-house that they have to pay wages and benefits and so forth, we could probably save about $30,000, if not more, just by having those pieces outsourced to our company.
Okay, interesting. Well, thanks for giving that information about kind of where the break point is for a company. I'm sure that companies are all the time trying to figure out if they should be outsourcing it or bringing it in-house. I mean, nowadays that seems to always be a hot topic. I kind of want to switch gears here, and you know, for the viewers who have listened to an earlier podcast, they know that I send out questions before we interview any of our SPIN members on the program. And one of the questions that Tim answered was, are your potential customers easily reachable? And I loved your answer here, Tim. And he kind of tied back into, how do you determine if a customer is easily reachable? And I'm kind of going to quote you here, saying that, you know, everyone has a computer these days, and so potential customers is pretty much endless. It's convincing them that they have a problem or that you have the answer to their problems is a bit more the difficult part. So along that, I wanted to kind of talk to you, Tim, about, you know, reaching your customers. How do you currently reach your customers?
Well, I've been trying a number of tactics, from anything from Yellow Pages ads to cold calling, and usually what works the best for me is really referrals. So usually somebody, you know, I know or have I've talked to that knows about my skill set passes my business card on to somebody else, or they'll come to me and say, hey, yeah, you know, I just talked to John Smith and he really needs some help. Why don't you give John Smith a call? And I'll give John a call and say, hey, how you doing, John? And here's what I can, you know, what your problem is. Well, here's a possible solution. I think one of the difficult parts in today's computer industry segment that's happening is there's a lot of people out there that are, from a customer standpoint, they're leery of the IT guy. They don't understand the technology behind what's going on their computer system, so they're very apprehensive of, you know, who do I bring in? How do I, you know, who do I have work on my computers? And on that line, too, what I found, a little bit off topic with your question, but partly on the topic as well, is they're getting burned. Some people are really getting burned out there. They talk to some guy who says, oh, yeah, I got the answer for you. And it turns out that the person really didn't know as much as they said they did. And then when I come behind that person, I say, well, hey, how you doing? Here's how I can help you. Even like on a cold call or even on a referral basis, I've had this happen. The people go, well, you know, they kind of hem and haw, and they go, well, I'm not sure, and they're really reluctant. So I've seen, like I said, both referral basis works the best for me. Cold calling I haven't seen as much, but usually I try and get in touch and see what other companies are doing, ask them questions, get involved a little bit in the community, and hopefully I can get in touch with the people that need my help and help them with their issues.
Okay. Great answer. thanks for giving all that information. I would just like to also ask, you know, you kind of mentioned about the industry. And so I'd like to know, where do you see the IT industry going? It was just announced a couple days ago that Microsoft, once again, is pushing back its release of Vista. It's a new operating system. And so just wanted to get your complete feel of where you see IT going in the next 2 to 5 years.
Well, exactly. Microsoft did go and push back Vista. And the biggest reason that they did is they have too many security issues that they're trying to address. And they're trying to come up with a package that's going to address all these security issues. Really, the biggest thing that's hindering the computer industry, and it's actually hindering, but it creates a market space, is there's so much going on with hacking these days into computer systems, into web servers, database servers, viruses, spyware, adware, things of that nature, that attack computers. You go down the magazine aisle in your local bookstore, grocery store, you look at the computers, magazines, and 90% of them are talking about security. The biggest thing on people's minds today is their computer security and their data security. Obviously, there's only so much that people can do. The hardware is getting better, so people aren't really worried about hardware failures as much when it comes to security of their data as much as they're worried about hackers, people phishing for information, and spyware. So I think really the next 2 to 5 years, what we're going to see is a huge amount of dollars spent. They're already being spent. I was just reading today, actually, an article on it, and according to Consumer Reports, over $9 billion was spent for computer repairs, parts, replacements, resetting up operating systems, all related to spyware and virus issues. That trend is only going to continue. As more and more computers become online, businesses are using them online more, internet is becoming cheaper, faster, the more speed that we see in our networks and for people getting connected to the internet only brings in speed of spyware and speed of adware and phishing and people hacking into systems. A lot of money is going to be spent into just dealing with those security issues.
Okay. You know, I would love to ask, and I'm sure our viewers would love to hear, after you talking so much about the, you know, security being such a major component in the industry and is going to be probably even an amazing growth area over the next several years. I mean, we've seen increased spending on defense and security by the government over the last 5 years. If there was one thing that an average non-technical computer user could do to make their system more secure, just one, what would that thing that they should do be?
Gosh, you're asking for one, and that's a hard one. It's really hard to just say one. I honestly can't just say, well, do this one thing. It used to give you an example, Eric, it used to be that if you said, hey, you know, I'm really worried about people, about problems on my computer, I used to be able to go to you know, eight years ago, and say, you know what, get Norton antivirus, get McAfee antivirus, get some sort of antivirus software, make sure it's always up to date, and run it all the time, and you'll be happy, you know. But nowadays, I can't say one. I have to tell you that you have to have antivirus software. That is number one. You got to have that. If you're a business, you have to have some sort of firewall. You must. You just have to. You have to put something in place to stop them before they even get to your computers and at least deter them. And finally, you have to have something for spyware and adware. So I can't say one. I'm sorry. I have to say all three. But to be fair, you know, I got to tell you all three.
I'm sure the listeners appreciate that, and hopefully they'll all today go out and make sure that they're doing those three things and make their computer secure.
I guess I can't give you a single answer though, Eric. I'll retreat on this one. The single answer, if you want to do one thing to make make sure your computer never gets a virus, spyware, adware, or has any more problems whatsoever, unplug it from the internet and never plug it back into the internet.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. You know, just don't ever turn it on again, and it'll be safe forever. Yeah, I can agree with you there. Oh, boy. Well, anyways, kind of moving on. Another question that I asked you during the survey was, what are your capital requirements for your business venture? And I thought your answer was phenomenal. I'm going to quote it here again. And what you said is, it's not so much the capital requirements, and I think a lot in the IT field, it's not about how much money and hardware anymore that you have to have like IBM used to, but it's having that intellectual property of your professional experiences. You have, you know, 16 years professionally, 23 years personally, just as in hobbies and working in IT. And so with that, how do you capture or get a return on that intellectual property since you have so many years?
Well, that's a tough question in a way, because I think some ways you don't get a return on it. I mean, I think the return is how much of an advantage are you to your client from an IT perspective, you know, from an IT person. How much of an advantage am I to my client? Am I going to be well-rounded to them, meaning that I understand their workstation, I understand their servers, I understand firewalls, I understand security, I understand a little bit about graphics and web design enough to at least guide them. I think that the biggest answer to that is really how valuable am I to my customers. I think they would say that I'm a huge resource to them, because they can bring a lot of problems my way, and I might not know the immediate answer, but I can find the answer. And I know where to look. I've been in the industry long enough to know where to look to find the answer. And I, you know, that in itself is worth its weight in gold, whatever that would be. But to my customer, knowing that they have somebody that they can rely on that will give them the correct answer, will research things out, work it out with them, that's an invaluable tool. And I'm not sure how you can put a return on investment on that the same way. It's not like a car lease where, you know, the car's going to depreciate at a certain value over time, and, oh, okay, it's been 3 years and the car's only worth $12,000 now, and you can say, okay, well, we made so much money on the car, and here's what we're selling in, here's our return on investment. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the same property value.
Yeah, I would agree. I would completely agree. So along those lines, let's kind of talk about some of your future plans with the company. You've been renaming it. You've renamed it a couple times. I think you have a great name now. And so, you know, over the next 2 to 5 years, what are you really trying to do with this company? Are you trying to take it to the next level, build up a brand? What are you looking to do over the next 2 to 5 years?
Well, I'd love to build up a brand, at least locally. What my customers really like is that they have consistent, complete coverage. They know they can come to me, they can ask me a question, they know they're going to get, the care is going to be given in the answer to their question, to their issues, and that I take care of them very well. They feel very confident in the way I take care of them, and you know, I have that personal touch with them to where they feel like they're getting very personalized service, and I care about their business. And I really do care about their business, because I want to see them succeed too and do whatever I can to offer them solutions that they're only going to do nothing but enhance their business. So I don't want to take my business to a level where it gets away from that look and feel to my customers, because I think they really value that. I would love to see my company have several employees, probably maybe 3 to 5 techs underneath myself, that we can all adopt that same philosophy, and where all of my customers always feel that they're being well taken care of and well managed. I'd hate to ever lose that piece of it, but I'd love to have, like I said, 3 to 5 employees underneath me that I can mentor and show them, you know, how to run a successful business and how to make your customers happy.
So how do you see yourself being able to instill that philosophy into your employees? You know, I would say that's very important, just as you said, to have that goodwill with your customer base. I would say even some of the larger companies that you compete with probably have difficulties finding good people and having them genuinely care about the customers. And so I was kind of wondering, what do you go about either in the hiring process or the continual education? How do you instill that same sort of passion and philosophy in with, you know, from interns to full-time employees?
Well, I think that there's so many steps involved. You have, ideally, the hiring process to at least get somebody who is at least somewhat on the same page as you, that has the character that you want them to have, the honesty and the integrity and the trustworthiness that you need. But I think on top of that, you have to invest in your employees. You have to make them feel like they're not an employee, but they are a part of the team, that they are, that their ideas, that their thoughts, that their resources of what knowledge they have, because again, it comes down to intellectual property. And intellectual property is what people know. And you need to, you know, for example, I like to hire people, I would prefer to hire people that know a little bit more than, a little bit different items than I know. So that way, you know, they can help round my skills out a little bit too. And as long as there's a constant understanding that we're all coming together as a team. And I think training's part of that, that you have to drive home repeatedly, you know, about customer service, who the customer is, but also maybe finding different ways of having the employees feel some ownership into the company as well, to where they feel like they're investing in their own future. It's not just a 9-to-5 job or, you know, some sort of a job that just is to fill time, but it's really to help them as well. And from an ex-employee standpoint, the companies I felt the most happy with when I was employees with other companies are the ones that I felt were investing in my future as well. And they had an interest in me personally in seeing me fulfill my own goals. I think, you know, that's a very needed area these days, is where employees are feeling, hey, this company really does care. They want to share my interests as well and not just have their own. Obviously, you have to have some structure in that realm as well. You can't just, you know, go too far off the deep end. But within reason, you know, helping those employees find their dreams as well really instills in them, you know, confidence of, hey, this is the right place for me, and I do want to do my best for these people.
Sounds good. I wanted to ask you a question because, you know, people listening to this podcast and this podcast talk show, you know, they want to know more about you as the business founder, the president, how you got there, what makes you tick. And so along those lines, I asked you the question, you know, did you have a mentor early in your career? Do you still have a mentor? Or do you now mentor other people? And kind of getting your whole philosophy around that topic. And your answer was phenomenal, but too long for me to repeat here. So I just kind of want to ask you the question again, and so that you can kind of give your answer to the audience. You know, did you have a mentor early on? Do you mentor now? Do you still have a mentor? How do you go about that?
That's a great question, and I think any entrepreneur looks back to kind of figure out where they started. That's always a fun, journey to look back and go, where did this really start at, and what happened? My mentor to start with, I'd have to say it was my dad. We both got into computers when I was 12, and he came from a high electronics background, worked with a lot of high-tech companies out of Southern California, and we both got interested in computers, and we kind of bounced computer items back and forth and would challenge one another on, hey, did you figure out how this worked? Yeah, I figured it out. This is what I figured out over here. Oh, okay, great. Now, how did we figure this out? So we challenged one another for a long time, sometimes at good levels, sometimes at frustrating levels. But it was a great growth experience, and we bounced things off to learn. So it really kind of started there as any type of mentor that I really had. Once I started my business, didn't really have a same mentor the same way. My father is actually going into the graphic design area more so, and we kind of touched base here and there on that. And I wanted to go more with computers, servers, and networks, and I really found a passion within networking computers together. So we kind of split paths a little bit that way. So I had a number of years of just really finding my own path within that, and working in different organizations that would allow me to learn about networking. And I just picked up any book I could and would read it and so forth, and kind of went that direction. I do have a couple of people that currently help me, but not really on the networking computer side. They really help me more so on just business aspects, and they're great people to know. It's always good people. It's always good to have some people in the industry that you can bounce ideas off of, and that's one thing we do within the Kirkland Spin Group, is we have ways that we can share ideas, thoughts, problem solve. And I have other people outside the industry, outside that group as well, that I've known for a number of years that I at least bounce some ideas off of. Future-wise, I definitely would see myself wanting to be in that role of a mentor to somebody else. I think that I've learned quite a number of things over the years, not only as a computer person, but also as a business owner, that to share that knowledge and say, hey, you know, I don't expect you to know it. I don't know it all. There's so many things I'm still learning every day and will continue to learn every day. And I kind of anticipate that with other people as well, that, hey, can I help them not have to struggle quite so hard?
Oh, fantastic. Great. Also, another quick question off kind of the board would be, you know, who is your number one competitor? And what do you feel that they do better than you, and what do you feel that you do better than them?
Gosh, I'm not even sure if there is a number one competitor. There's a number of computer companies in the area that we do very similar. You know, there's a lot of companies in this particular region that we all do the same thing. We do a lot with networks and computers and workstations. I think one of the ways that I'm different, though, I guess that's the only way I can really, you know, answer this question, is I think that I found more of a niche coming in with remote support. I don't think a lot of companies are still doing a lot of remote support. What a lot of companies I see that are doing are they handle people's networks, they're setting up servers, they're setting up workstations, firewalls, so forth, and then when their customers have a problem, they scramble to try to fit time in for their customers and to fit those problem resolutions in. We here at Network Virtual Support, what we like to do is we're coming in from the other side. So we kind of see a whole different marketplace on it that hasn't really been, I don't think it's been tapped quite the same. And what that marketplace is, we set up servers and networks and firewalls, but the bulk of what we're trying to do is not that. The bulk of what we're actually trying to do is to be readily available tech support when you need it. So you have a problem, you want an answer within a half an hour, not half a week or a week and a half away. You want somebody you can call who can either remote on your machine or get to your site with a relatively quick time frame, solve your issue, and let you continue to have a productive office by continuing to work on that machine. So that's what we're trying to do, and I don't really see a lot of companies doing that. I really see them coming from the other perspective of doing all kinds of other work, and then, oh, there's a problem. Well, I can get there after hours. Is that okay? I'm not really sure how that works in today's society. So as people move forward and they want things quicker and faster, we're trying to provide that by having a phone number that people can call. We remote on their machine, we fix their issue, and we move forward.
Would you say that you know, just dealing with the client demand is the biggest challenge facing the computer service industry today? Or would you say that competition is the biggest challenge facing the computer service today, basically having too much supply of people being able to provide the services. You know, where do you see the biggest challenge lying?
One of the biggest challenges that I see currently is that there's a number of people. There's a lot of great companies like myself. There's a lot of companies that we've been in the industry for a very long time, 10 plus years. We know our stuff. We've been around the block. We know what's true, tested. We have things in place, support items in place to make sure that we help our customers in the best way. We know where to find solutions and so forth. I think one of the biggest challenges, though, is there's a number of people out there that kind of know a little bit about computers, and they sell themselves that they know everything about computers. And I'm not trying to be mean to anybody, but I think that they overstate where they're at. And what happens is the industry as a whole is actually being hampered right now because there's a lot of people that are willing to work out there in the industry for $20, $25, $30 an hour, saying that they're giving top quality network support, but the real truth is that the person kind of knows what they're doing. Well, that kind of knowledge actually has a very damping effect on the rest of the industry because, for one, they go out to the customer, and I actually had a guy call me up. To give you a great example, Eric. Guy calls me up. He says, "Hey, I need some help trying to set up terminal services on my Windows 2003 small business server." The guy that was just here, he said he could do it. He kept fumbling around the help menus for 4 hours. I finally kicked him out because he doesn't know what he's talking about. How soon can you be here? And what happens is that person doesn't understand. By doing that, they're coming in, they're undercutting me, they're doing it at half the price I can do it, or a third the price that I charge, but they don't have the knowledge. So one of two things either happens. Either one, they put a really bad taste in that customer's mouth because now they've totally disappointed that customer. So now that customer is extremely leery of the next person that comes along. Or the other item is maybe they complete the job somewhat. So it's partially installed. It looks like it's working properly, but they haven't really tested everything out. Well, that's kind of okay. It kind of works. But at the same time, they just charge that customer for 6 hours when I would have taken an hour and a half. So the customer, he got charged $30 an hour at 6 hours, so he paid $180 for what I could have done for $150, $170, and actually had it completed, tested, documented, so forth, all the way through.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful on kind of answering where you see the biggest challenge of the industry. I kind of want to switch gears here, and as this is the Spin Talk Show, and Spin being all about masterminding, how did you first come in contact with the kind of philosophy of masterminding? When did you originally hear about it? And then kind of how did you get involved with Spin?
To start with, how I found Spin. I found Spin actually looking through Seattle Times. I actually got hooked up with the business calendar within Seattle Times where it would email me updates of what was going on with different things in the area, and I kept seeing, hey, what's this Spin thing going on? So I wanted to check it out. So that's when I gave you a call and said, hey, I want to RSVP, come out to a meeting. Came out to your meeting in Kirkland at Tully's there and found out that, hey, there's a bunch of people that have been in their industry for a number of years, and they're coming together to collectively share knowledge and support one another to find solutions to marketing and finding customers and what works the best, what doesn't work the best, hey, what about this idea? And I've always had that philosophy to start with, in my involvement with other people, of hey, they have knowledge, I have knowledge, can we share that knowledge and each learn from it and move forward and be better people? So I already had that philosophy, and it was kind of just heartwarming to find a group that was all about that particular strategy.
Okay. Okay, good, good. Well, anyways, Tim, as we kind of wrap down here, and we may just be a little bit over on time, but it's been great talking with you, and I'm sure the audience has really enjoyed it. But if there's someone out there who wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way that they can contact you?
Well, there's a number of ways. I'm obviously have a business telephone, 425-605-0454. I have a web address, which is www.netvirtualsupport.com, or they can email me at tknuth@netvirtualsupport.com as well.
Okay, and that was T-K-N-U-T-H and net virtual support.
Yep, netvirtualsupport.com.
Fantastic. We'll make sure to have all that contact information for Tim up on the website. So if you're listening to this through your iTunes or your iPod, feel free to go to our podcast website and then just pull the minutes and notes down from there, and you can easily get connected up with Tim and Network Virtual Support. Well, Tim, let me thank you again for coming on and being a guest on the Spin Talk Show, and hopefully we'll have you back on soon.
Well, thanks, Eric. I appreciate being on here. I appreciate being given the opportunity to share what I've been doing business-wise, as well as where we're going and what I can do to help other people. So thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome.
As we conclude this episode of the Spin Podcast Talk Show, I would like to thank our sponsors, UBA, United Business Alliance, and remind all of you that we are accepting bids for the final sponsorship position. Tune in next week as we will be talking with Tony Cross of Seasonal Color Pots. If you would like to get in touch with the show, contact us at 1-800-521-4304 or email podcast@usspin.com. That is podcast@usspin.com.